You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
It's my great pleasure to welcome all of you here this evening for what is going to be a rare opportunity to hear from the Foreign Minister of the People's Republic of China, Wang Yi. As I look around this room, I see many friends and supporters of the institution, friends of China, friends from China, and I'm grateful to all of you for making the effort to be here this evening. We also have quite a number of representatives of the diplomatic corps. I want to particularly thank Ambassador Cui for the help and cooperation and extended hospitality, if I can put it that way, in helping putting this evening's program together. I think everybody knows a lot about our guest of honor's distinguished career. He came into his present post in March after spending virtually all of his career, including a stint that he spent as a visiting scholar at Georgetown University, as a specialist on Asia, and particularly a specialist on Japan. As vice minister for the region, that is Asia, he played a vital role in getting the diplomacy involved with the North Korean nuclear program onto a constructive track. And as China's ambassador to Japan, he was there at a particularly sensitive time in that bilateral relationship, as I think everybody knows. And by the end of his tenure as Chinese ambassador to Japan, it can be said, I think, that the PRC-Japanese relationship was on a steadier course than it had been on when he arrived. He also served as director of the Taiwan Affairs Office in the State Council. He has graced us here at Brookings with his presence before, but this is his first time, of course, in his capacity as foreign minister. And we're all very grateful to have an opportunity to hear his views on a new model for great power relations between the United States and China. That is the topic that occupied a good deal of time between our presidents when they met at Sunnylands, and it's a topic that they returned to when they met at the G20 in St. Petersburg. It's also an issue that is very much on the agenda here at Brookings of the John L. Thornton China Center and our Brookings Tsinghua Center in Beijing. So both in Washington and in Beijing, we at Brookings are doing as much as we can to improve and identify areas of cooperation between the United States and China. And it's in that spirit that we welcome the foreign minister back to Brookings tonight. The minister is going to offer some opening remarks. There are earphones on your tables. The simultaneous English interpretation can be found on channel 2. And when he finishes his remarks, there will be a conversation moderated by my colleague Jeff Bader, who was the founding director of the Thornton China Center here at Brookings, also a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for East Asia and Pacific Affairs in the State Department, and President Obama's Senior Director for Asia at the National Security Council. So, Mr. Minister, once again, welcome, and the podium is yours.
Ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, it's my pleasure to be here to meet old friends and make new ones. When I was preparing my speech in Beijing, my colleague encouraged me to speak English, and I agreed. But finally, I found I have no enough time to practice my English. So I will decide to speak my own language, Chinese. Because, you know, the Georgetown just gave me, only gave me the half year. Maybe next time I can do it. So we can use the headsets. 很高兴再次来到Brookings学会。
It gives me great pleasure to be back at the Brookings Institution and share with you my thoughts on the way toward a new model of major country relations between China and the United States, and I will be happy to take your questions. Before I start, I wish to thank the Brookings Institution and the President Strobe Talbot for graciously hosting this event. Over the past few years, I was here several times to meet your experts and scholars. As the President said just now, at that time I wore the hat of the Minister of the Taiwan Affairs Office. I was in charge of affairs related to Taiwan and the reunification of China, so the topics focused on the question of Taiwan. I remember that at that time, many of you wanted to ask me issues on foreign policy, so my reply was always, sorry, they're beyond my portfolio. But today you can rest assured that I will not say sorry again, no matter what foreign policy questions you raise. This is a year of great significance in China-U.S. relations. Last June, the two presidents held a successful and historic meeting in Annenberg Estate, California. The most important outcome is that China and the United States agreed to build a new model of major country relations. The agreement is strategic, constructive, and path-breaking in nature. It has charted the future course for our relations. It will surely produce a positive and profound impact on the Asia-Pacific and indeed the evolution of the international landscape. With the agreement come two questions. First, what is this new model of relations about? And second, how to make it a reality? President Xi Jinping has laid out a clear vision for the new models. In his words, the essential features of this model include 1, no conflict or confrontation, 2, mutual respect, and 3, win-win cooperation. This answers the first question. No conflict or confrontation is the prerequisite for the new model of major country relations between us. According to some study of history, there have been about 15 cases of rise of emerging powers. In 11 cases, confrontation and war broke out between the emerging and the established powers. However, we now live in a different world. China and the United States, and in fact, all countries in the world, are part of a community of shared interests. Countries are increasingly interconnected. Neither of us will benefit from confrontation. War will get us nowhere. No conflict or confrontation means that we need to follow the trend of globalization, reverse negative projections of China-U.S. relations, address strategic distrust, and build confidence in the future of China-U.S. relations. Mutual respect is a basic principle for this new model. We live in a world of rich diversity. For China and the United States, two major countries different in social system, history, and culture, yet connected by intertwined interests, mutual respect is all the more important. Only by respecting each other's system and the path chosen by their people, as well as each other's core interests and concerns, can we seek common ground while reserving differences, and on that basis, expand common ground and dissolve differences so that China and the United States will be able to live together in harmony. Win-win cooperation is the only way to turn the vision into a reality. There is an enormous need and vast potential for bilateral cooperation in all fields. Besides, the world certainly needs China and the United States, two major countries with great influence, to work together and contribute on issues ranging from counterterrorism to cybersecurity, from nuclear nonproliferation to climate change, and from peace in the Middle East to Africa's development. Win-win progress is only possible when both countries are committed to growing cooperation. Moreover, such win-win outcome should not just be beneficial to China and the United States, it should also be beneficial to all countries in the world. Now let me turn to the second question, which is more important, that is, how can we make the new model of relations a reality? Indeed, this will be a systemic project that requires ideas and efforts of people from all walks of life in both countries. It also needs the sustained political resolve, persistent commitment, and tireless efforts of both sides. I know that many American friends say to me that this new model is great, but it must not be just a slogan. I fully agree with them. It should not stay at the level of a concept only. It should become a reality through concrete actions. American friends are very pragmatic, so are the Chinese. This is why the moment I arrived in the United States, in my first meeting with the press, I said publicly that I am here this time to send a clear message. That is, our two countries should work together. Let's use concrete action to advance this new model. Let's carry out specific cooperation to reflect or to enrich this new model. In fact, there are so many areas that we can cooperate. And I'd like to talk about my observations on how to build such a new model from the following aspects. First, we need to enhance strategic trust to put this new model of relationship on a more solid foundation. We have all along emphasized that China's development is peaceful in nature. We have never had the strategic intention to challenge or even replace the United States for its position in the world. We truly wish to work together with the United States and all other countries for peace and common development. We are aware of U.S. statement that it does not see China as a threat or intend to contain China. Instead, it wishes to see a strong and stable China. This is right. As long as China and the United States can both stick to this strategic direction in their action, we will certainly build up strategic trust and strengthen the foundation for this new model of relationship. Second, we need to promote practical cooperation to put this new model of relationship on more shared interests. Over more than four decades since the establishment of our diplomatic relations, Fast-growing economic cooperation and trade have brought huge benefits to each country's development. They have served as a stabilizer that enables China-U.S. relations to forge ahead despite winds and waves. Today, bilateral trade is almost $500 billion, and mutual investment more than $80 billion. According to the latest report from China-U.S. Exchange Foundation, in 10 years' time, by 2022, our two countries will become each other's top trading partner. By then, U.S. exports to China will exceed $450 billion, which means over 2.5 million jobs created in this country. The number of Chinese tourists visiting the United States will grow to 10 million from 1.5 million in 2012. These are conclusions of the joint study by Chinese and American scholars, not from the Chinese side only. I believe they will give a strong impetus to the historic process of this new model of relationship. Recently, China has agreed to carry out substantive negotiations with the United States on the bilateral investment treaty on the basis of pre-establishment national treatment and the negative list. This shows the great sincerity and resolve of the Chinese government to deepen China-U.S. economic and trade cooperation. This will open up new prospects for bilateral business ties. There is also a need for the two countries to tap cooperation potential in such fields as energy, environmental protection, urbanization, biotech, and infrastructure. China takes U.S. concerns on market access and IPR protection seriously and is prepared to take measures to address them. At the same time, China hopes the United States will ease its control over high-tech export to China and give fair treatment to Chinese companies investing in this country. Third, we need to enhance people-to-people and cultural exchange and put this new model of relationship on stronger public support. State-to-state relations, at the end of the day, are about people-to-people relations. In today's world, public opinion has increasingly become a significant factor shaping or even defining bilateral relationship. Friendship between peoples leads to amity between nations and vice versa. Therefore, the success of our endeavor to build a new model of major country relationship hinges greatly upon the understanding, involvement, and support of the majority of our two peoples. With this in mind, we need to encourage and expand interactions in various areas and between various groups, including families, communities, schools, and NGOs at the grassroots level, so that our peoples will understand each other better and deepen friendship. We need to strengthen cultural exchange. And as the two sides meet and interact, they will gradually achieve mutual tolerance and inclusiveness. We also need to lead public opinion in respective countries so that the voice advocating China-U.S. friendship and cooperation will become the mainstream and public support for our relations will grow stronger. Fourth, we need to strengthen cooperation in international and regional hotspots and global issues and put this new model of relationship on greater common responsibilities. The United States is the biggest developed country, while China is the biggest developing country in the world. The two countries share ever-growing converging interests and shoulder increasingly greater common responsibilities on such major issues as maintaining regional and international stability and promoting sustainable development of mankind. Joint contribution to world peace and stability and progress of civilization is what the international community expects of our two countries. It should therefore also be an inherent feature of this new model of relationship. China is prepared to engage in all-dimensional cooperation with the United States at regional and global levels. What we seek is not the so-called G2, but each complementing the other with its respective advantages. China is ready to shoulder international responsibilities commensurate with its national strength and reality. And together with the United States, offer more quality public goods for the international community. China and the United States can cooperate on any issue. We may not always see eye to eye, but that should not prevent us from talking to each other. As long as we truly act in the shared interests of the two countries and for the benefit of regional and global stability and prosperity, our positions will get closer and our strategic trust will surely get enhanced. On cybersecurity, a peaceful, secure, open, and cooperative cyberspace is in the interest of all countries in the world, including China and the United States. China firmly opposes any behavior that disrupts order in cyberspace and endangers cybersecurity. As a matter of fact, China is a victim of hacking and other cyber attacks. To safeguard cybersecurity, we need cooperation instead of finger-pointing. The first meeting of China-U.S. Cyber Working Group made a good beginning. We need to keep up constructive dialogue and promote the formulation of international cyber rules to help ensure cybersecurity. On climate change, our two sides have set up a climate change working group within the SNED framework. As China is committed to deepening economic structural readjustment and accelerating the shift of growth model, addressing climate change meets its own need of sustainable development in the first place. We are ready to enhance cooperation with the United States on environmental protection, energy conservation, and emissions reduction, and alternative and renewable energy, take part in relevant climate change negotiations in a responsible manner, and jointly contribute to sustainable development. On Syria, China is firmly opposed to the use of chemical weapons by any country or individual. We believe that political settlement is the only right way out in defusing the Syrian crisis. We support an early launch of the process to destroy Syria's chemical weapons. At the same time, a Geneva II should be held as soon as possible, thus bringing the Syrian issue back to the track of political settlement. On Palestine and Israel, China has promoted peace talks in a responsible manner and stands ready to work closely with the United States to push the two sides to make concerted efforts on the Iranian nuclear issue. First, China and the United States should genuinely respect and accommodate each other's interests and concerns in the Asia-Pacific. China respects the traditional influence and immediate interests of the United States in the Asia-Pacific. We have never thought about pushing the U.S. out of the region. Rather, we hope the United States will play a positive and constructive role in safeguarding peace, stability, and development in the Asia-Pacific. As President Xi Jinping aptly pointed out, the vast Pacific Ocean is broad enough to accommodate our two big countries. The Asia-Pacific has been the home and root of the Chinese nation for thousands of years. Therefore, we hope that the United States will also respect China's interests and concerns. The Taiwan question concerns China's sovereignty and territorial integrity. It bears on the national sentiments of the 1.3 billion Chinese people. Right now, cross-strait relations enjoy a momentum of peaceful development. It is the common desire of people on both sides of the straits to have peace rather than war, cooperation rather than confrontation, and exchanges rather than estrangement. Gradual integration of the two sides through two-way interactions and cooperation will lead to ultimate reunification. This is a historical trend that no one can stop. For many years, the Taiwan question has been a liability in China-U.S. relations that undermines mutual trust and disrupts cooperation. However, if the United States can go along with the prevailing trend of peaceful development, of cross-race relations, and genuinely appreciate and respect China's efforts to oppose separation and achieve peaceful reunification, the issue, once a liability and a negative factor in our relationship, will be turned into an asset and a positive factor, providing guarantee to the long-term steady growth of China-U.S. relations and opening prospect for all-round cooperation. Second, China and the United States should work together to produce substantive results in our cooperation over hotspot issues in the Asia-Pacific. If we can succeed in doing so, we will be able to accumulate experience for strategic cooperation on a global scale and demonstrate to the rest of the world our ability and resolve to jointly safeguard regional peace and stability. A case in point is the Korean nuclear issue. China and the United States have built much consensus on the issue. It is our common responsibility to advance denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula and to maintain peace in Northeast Asia. Yesterday was the 8th anniversary of the September 19th joint statement. The day before yesterday, China hosted an international workshop in Beijing to mark the 10th anniversary of the six-party talks. China believes that dialogue and the negotiation is the right path toward a nuclear weapon-free peninsula, and that the six-party talks have turned out to be an effective mechanism for dialogue. The parties concerned should recommit themselves as soon as possible to the joint statement and work together to create the necessary conditions for the restart of the six-party talks. The U.S. position on this is of vital importance. China is ready to keep in touch with the U.S. side. We are also ready to cooperate with the United States on other regional hotspot issues, such as Afghanistan. 10 days ago, the second China-U.S. collaborative training course for Afghan diplomats was launched here in D.C. I sent a congratulatory message to the program. Afghanistan is now in a phase of crucial transition. Whether the country can proceed smoothly with domestic reconciliation and reconstruction concerns the common interests of China, the United States, and other countries in the region. China-U.S. cooperation on Afghanistan has just started. There is great potential and room for enhanced cooperation if our two countries can work with each other and bring out our respective strengths. We can turn the issue into a new highlight in our bilateral cooperation. Ladies and gentlemen, not long ago, President Xi and President Obama met again on the margins of the G20 summit in St. Petersburg. The two leaders reiterated their commitment to this new model of major country relationship. Yet the building of such a relationship requires not only political guidance from our leaders, but also, and more importantly, the involvement and support of people across the society in both countries, including the continuous intellectual input from the academia. The Brookings Institution is one of the most influential think tanks in the United States. According to my American friends, to find out what the U.S. government will do next, one only has to look at what the Brookings Institution is working on. The Brookings Institution has always had a keen interest in U.S. relations with China. For this purpose, it set up John L. Thornton China Center, bringing together many renowned experts on China-U.S. relations and doing a great deal of work in promoting bilateral ties. I hope and I am confident that as China and the United States build this new model of major country relationship, the Brookings Institution will continue to play a positive role and make an important contribution. Thank you. Now it seems I need to answer your questions.
I'd like to thank Minister Wong for an address that was full of insight and full of ideas about how to build a new model of major power relationship.
首先感谢王外长刚才就如何构建中美新型大国关系发表的内容全面思想深刻的演讲。
As the minister said, there was concern at the outset that this might be just a slogan. I think what we've heard from the minister tonight are some excellent ideas about how to make this much more than a slogan.
就像王外长刚才在演讲中提出的，一开始有人担心构建中美新型大国关系可能只会停留在口号上。刚才王外长的演讲当中已经提出了如何构建新型大国关系的很多有益的想法。
It's also important that this, this name of the, for the relationship not simply be an umbrella for all of the old issues and all the old disputes. We need to infuse this new model with, if you will, the spirit of Sunnylands and some new determination to solve problems rather than merely repeat old positions and old talking points.
还有一点非常重要，就是我们如何定位中美关系，应该不只是重复过去存在的问题和存在的分歧，应该充分地体现两国元首在安南伯格庄园会晤时所体现出的精神，展现出解决问题的决心，而不只是重复过去的立场。
And I think Minister Wong has blazed the path and shown us the way how to do that.
我认为王外长刚才在演讲中为我们已经指明了这样做的方向。
So I'd like to take my take advantage of my position as a moderator today to ask the first question, if I could, Ms. Minister.
我想作为今天问答环节的主持人，先问第一个问题。
And we thank you for being willing to take some questions that will doubtless be difficult and probably unpleasant. My question is, as Strobe Talbot indicated, you are almost certainly the leading expert in the Chinese government on the subject of Japan. Do you want me to complete the question? Although I must say that the gentleman who followed you as ambassador to Japan also did a terrific job, Ambassador Sui. For many of us, it has been very upsetting to see the world's second and third largest economies have their relationship become tense and deteriorate over what to many of us on the outside appear to be four uninhabited and uninhabitable rocks. I know it looks different in China and Japan, but that is the truth. As a foreign minister and as China's leading Japan expert, do you have confidence and ideas about how to renormalize relations between China and Japan in the coming months? Will it require some sort of agreement about the Diaoyu Senkaku Islands, these four uninhabited rocks, or will the two countries take a broader, higher view and look at the many important common interests that they have and find a way to rebuild the relationship?
我的第一个问题呢是有关中日关系。您是中国外交部一度长期主管中日关系的中日关系方面的专家。最近一段时间以来，由于在四个无人岛礁上存在的争议，我们看到世界第二大和第三大经济体，也就是中日两国之间的关系出现的紧张状态，而且每况愈下。中日之间存在有关岛屿的争端， 是我们看到的现实。现在中国，您作为中国的外长以及在中日关系问题上的专家，您对于在未来几个月中日关系实现再正常化是否抱有信心？您觉得应该如何做？需要两国之间就有关钓鱼岛达成某种协议才能实现关系的转圜吗？还是您认为两国能够有能力从更长远的角度，基于两国之间重大的共同利益，找到解决问题的办法？
贝德先生一上来就跟我提了非常敏感的问题。
Mr. Bader asked a very sensitive question from the very beginning.
但我首先要告诉大家的是，钓鱼岛是中国的固有的领土，我们这个立场是一贯的、明确的，不会改变，也不应该改变。中国在维护国家主权和领土安全问题上有着坚定的决心，这一点我首先要向大家讲清楚。
Well, to answer this question, I want to first be very clear that it is China's consistent and clear position that the Diaoyu Islands are an integral part of the Chinese territory. And this position of ours has not changed, and nor should it change. China has a firm determination to uphold its sovereignty and territorial integrity.
当然我们知道日本方面也有日本方面的一些想法和意见，那么怎么办呢？中国在处理领土争端的问题上，我们一贯是愿意采取一种对话和谈判的方式。
At the same time, we are aware that the Japanese side has its own thoughts and views. Then what should we do? It is China's consistent position that when it comes to territorial disputes,We are ready to resolve the disputes through dialogue and negotiation.
所以41年前，当中日两国终于打破多年的隔阂，再次坐在一起实现了关系正常化的时候，当时的两国领导人就达成了一个非常重要的共识，或者说这是谅解也可以。就这个问题，双方立场不同，那我们把它搁置下来，以后我们再去想办法去解决。
Thus, 41 years ago, when China and Japan broke their years of estrangement and achieved the normalization of diplomatic relations, leaders of the two countries reached a very important agreement, or you can call it.In an understanding, that is, we have different positions on this issue and we can set aside our difference and take care of it or resolve it at some later date.
很多的外交的文书，包括当年经历过这个过程的中日双方外交官，对此都记忆犹新。这是一个事实。
This understanding has been incorporated into many diplomatic documents, and the memory of reaching such understanding is still fresh on the minds of both Japanese and Chinese diplomats who were personally involved in that part of history.
由此，钓鱼岛及其附近的海域，包括东海，才保持了几十年的和平、稳定的状态。
That has enabled the continuance of peace and stability on the Diaoyu Islands and in their adjacent waters, including in the East China Sea for so many years.
但遗憾的是，我们大家都知道，去年日本方面采取了一个行动，就是所谓的用国有化来强化了他对中国的领土钓鱼岛的他的主张和他的控制，那么打破了40多年来的状况。那么这种情况之下，大家可以想象，
中国当然要做出反应，而且必须要做出反应。
However, to our regret, last year the Japanese side decided to press its claim and control over the Chinese territory, the Diaoyu Islands, by nationalizing these islands, and that move broke what existed over these islands in the past 40 years, and under such circumstances, one can easily imagine that the Chinese side must and surely need to make a response to it.
所以这个问题可能很复杂，但是实际上，这个 whole picture 实际上非常简单，就是这么一个事情。
So the situation may seem very complicated, but the whole story is actually a very simple and clear one.
但是后来为什么情况越来越，变得，更加朝着大家不希望的方向去发展呢？我要告诉大家的是，之后日本方面讲，四十年前不存在这个谅解，也不存在这个共识。这个当然中国方面不可能是接受的，因为刚才讲它是一个历史事实。
Then how come the circumstances continued to move in an undesirable direction? I want to tell you that it is because the Japanese side denied the existence of such an agreement or understanding which was reached 40 years ago, and certainly this is unacceptable to the Chinese side because, as I said before, this is a historical fact.
尽管如此，我们仍然愿意跟他谈，愿意跟他对话，坐下来谈，怎么来管控当前的局势，找到一个办法。但是日本方面跟我们讲，中日双方在这个问题上不存在争议，不存在争议就没有谈的这种可能了，只有存在争议才去谈嘛。所以实际上大家可以理解为什么现在谈不了。
In spite of this, we are still ready to sit down and have dialogue with the Japanese side to work jointly out of a way to control, to manage the current situation. But the Japanese has said to us that there is no such dispute between China and Japan, and that has made it impossible for the dialogue to happen.
当然，中日两国是邻国，而且永远的邻国，也不可能搬家。两国之间有着非常频繁的人员往来和经贸上的合作，我们当然还是愿意继续坐下来通过谈判来寻找解决问题的办法。我们对话和谈判的门是打开的，当然作为日本方面来讲，他应该承认这个地方有争议啊，全世界都知道这个地方有争议，日本方面却说没有争议。我想总有一天日本方面会坐在谈判桌前来跟我们谈这个问题，我们会找到一个办法。
China and Japan are perpetual neighbors, and the two countries have very close people-to-people exchange and business ties. We are still ready to sit down and have dialogue with the Japanese side. But first, the Japanese side needs to recognize there is such a dispute. The whole world knows there is a dispute here. I believe that there will be a day when the Japanese come back to this table of dialogue.
所以，今后形势会怎么发展，不仅仅看中方，也要看日本方面。但是，我想，我们总会有一天要坐到一起，要谈这个问题，认真的、严肃的谈这个问题，谈出一个办法，解决办法来。
So how things will go next? It's not just up to the Chinese side, but also up to the Japanese side too. But I believe eventually there will come a day when the two sides come together to have serious dialogue and discussion to work out a solution.
谢谢。
Thank you, Mr. Minister, for that comprehensive answer. I'd like to take two questions now, and we'll see after these two questions are posed and answered if there's any more time. The minister does have a tight schedule and is heading to New York, but can we get a couple of questions? Let's try Secretary Cohen and Jonathan Pollack. Secretary Cohen, please.
Mr. Minister, thank you very much for a very comprehensive statement about the foreign policy of China. I attended a conference recently in Singapore, and during the course of the conference, I met with a number of your counterparts throughout the ASEAN countries. And an issue was raised during that time. Mm-hmm. I'll stop here.
It's okay.
Go ahead, please.
An issue was raised during that time about the so-called nine-dash line that is drawn in the South China Sea. And you mentioned earlier, of course, that we want to respect each other and accommodate each other's interests in the Asia-Pacific region. Mm-hmm. And the issue that was raised is whether or not the so-called nine-dash line, which had appeared in many maps prior to last June, now had been distributed. The new maps show a solid line. And I was wondering, is there any significance between the nine-dash line, which indicates some dispute or some question about sovereignty, and a solid line, which would seem to be something quite different?
And Jonathan?
非常感谢您刚才就中国的外交政策所做的一个全面的阐述。在不久前，我在新加坡出席了一个会议，会议上我见到了您来自东盟几个国家的同事，他们向我提到这样一个问题，就是涉及中国在南海的九段线。刚才您演讲当中也提到了，在亚太地区要相互尊重，照顾彼此的重大利益和关切。我想我看到的是，之前这个九段线在中国出版的地图中呢，也出现过，是以虚线的形式出现的。但后来新版的这个中国出版的地图呢，已经把这个九段线变成了实线，这两者之间是不是涉及到主权上的立场上的这种主权的立场，有没有这两者之间有没有什么区别
？Continue,
yes,
please,
yes, Minister Wang, thank you so much for your very very full and candid remarks. I would like to raise the issue again of Korea and the Korean Peninsula, if I could. This has been a question that has persisted for many, many years. North Korea now, of course, insists that it is a nuclear weapons state. It continues to expand its nuclear weapons potential and states unequivocally that it has no intention of giving up its nuclear weapons capacities. Quite the contrary, it wants to enlarge them. What reasons should we have for optimism in this case? You have mentioned, of course, the six-party talks, the anniversary of the September 2005 agreement, in which China, of course, played a vital role. What reasons would we have for optimism about what could result from any kind of resumed talks? And how do you see the United States and China cooperating in this area as kind of a test case of this new model of major power relations? Thank you.
王外长，感谢您刚才全面和坦诚的演讲。我的问题呢是关于朝鲜半岛的。朝鲜半岛的核问题存在已经很长时间了。朝鲜呢表示自己已经是一个有核国家，而且还在不断地拓展自己的核武器发展的潜力，并且明确表示无意放弃核武器能力，相反是在不断地加强核武器的能力。刚才您在演讲中也提到六方会谈以及919共同声明的发表和不久前的纪念日，其中中国发挥了非常重要的作用。我的问题呢是在解决朝鲜核问题上，我们为什么有能力抱一种乐观的态度呢？是什么能让我们对待这个问题的解决可以抱一种乐观的态度？您如何看待中美两国在解决这个问题上的合作，作为建设中美新型大国关系的一个试金石？
这两个问题都很重要。
Both questions are important ones.
柯云先生刚才提这个问题，我是第一次听到，就是虚线变成实线了。
Well, for the question raised by Secretary Cohen, it's actually for me, it's the first time for me to hear it. That is, the line has been changed into a solid one.
我想告诉你的是，在这个问题上，中国的立场没有变化。所以，实现这个事情，我想它不应该是不应该出现。如果你看到的话，可以告诉我在什么地方。那么这个九段线大家都知道是1948年，当时的中国国民政府所画下的线，一直到现在，中国历届政府持续坚持了九段线，所以它既是我们始终坚持的立场，也是一个没有变化的立场。所以你这个消息，我觉得还是需要check 一下。应该说是没有变化的。
Well, what I can say to you is that there has been no change in China's position with respect to the nine dash line. I don't think this line should become a solid one, but if you did see such a map showing this, I would have to maybe further look into it and check it. But this line, the nine dash line, was joined by the ROC government back in 1948, and this has been upheld by the successive Chinese governments, and I don't think there has been any change in our position on this issue.
第二个问题关于超核问题。那么超核问题我们讲了很多了，本人曾经是六方会谈第一任的团长，主持过三轮六方会谈，但是确实很遗憾的事情，之后那么这个六方会谈停下来了，一直停到现在，这是我们不希望看到的。
Well, second, about the Korean nuclear issue, there has been much discussion about this issue.And I was personally involved in the six-party talks, acting as the head of the Chinese delegation, chairing three rounds of the talks. But to our deep regret that the six-party talks have been at a standstill for quite some time, which is something that none of us wants to see.
朝鲜方面确实像刚才所说的，他讲过刚才引用的这些言论，我们也注意到了。
We are also aware of these statements that Mr. Pollack just referred to, which were made by the DPRK side.
但是我要告诉大家的事情，最近一段时间，那么有了一些变化。朝鲜方面已经表示，他们愿意，也不反对，重新回到919声明的立场上。包括回到美朝之间所达成的229，就是去年2月29号的立场上。
But I would also like to tell you that there have been some new developments recently. For example, the DPRK has said that it is not object, it does not object to the September 19th joint statement, and it is actually ready. To come back to the statement and also the February 29th deal it had with the United States.
919声明第一条就是朝鲜放弃一切核武器和核计划。
The first article set out in September 19th joint statement is that the DPRK gives up all nuclear weapons and nuclear programs.
当然在921声明当中，中国、美国还有其他的各方也都承担了自己的责任和义务。
At the same time, the joint statement also sets out the respective responsibilities and obligations for China, the United States, and other parties concerned.
还有一个变化就是朝鲜方面最近已经不止一次表示，他们愿意重申回到
半岛无核化的立场上去。他们认为这是朝鲜的领袖的遗训，他们应该继续的遵循。
Another change on the part of the DPRK recently is that the DPRK said it is ready to reiterate that it will be committed to the denuclearization because they said this is a legacy of their past leaders.
所以说，半岛的无核化，这是我们共同的一个目标。朝鲜方面已经重新确认回到半岛无核化上来。那我们就坐下来谈，重新启动六方会谈，来谈怎么来实现这个无核化。
To achieve the denuclearization of the peninsula is our common goal. Now that the DPRK side has reiterated that it will come back to the denuclearization goal, it's time for the six parties to sit down and have serious dialogue to work out how we can achieve this goal.
我这次到美国来谈的很重要的内容之一，就是跟美方同志们来探讨如何来恢复六方会谈。我们要设定一个合理的门槛，各方都能接受的门槛。
So one of the important items on my agenda of visit to the United States is to discuss with the U.S. side how we can resume the six-party process to set a reasonable threshold for the resumption of the talks, a threshold that is acceptable to all the parties.
至于中国方面的立场，我想大家都很清楚，我们坚定地主张半岛要实现无核化。我们始终认为，半岛无核化不仅符合中方的利益，也符合朝鲜方面的利益，当然也符合包括美国在内的各国的共同利益。
Our position is a clear one. We are firm in our commitment to the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. We believe this is in China's own interest, and we believe it is also in the DPRK's interest and the interest of all other parties, including the United States.
同时我们也主张必须要通过和平的方式，通过对话谈判来解决这个问题。
Meanwhile, we believe this issue needs to be peacefully resolved through dialogue and negotiation.
那么这种对话谈判，它的目标或它的目的是要解决各方的关切，包括朝鲜方面的合理的关切，我们当然也应该给予考虑和解决。
And the purpose of such dialogue and negotiation is to address the concerns of all the parties involved, including the legitimate concerns of the DPRK.
我想在推进半岛无核化、通过谈判解决问题这两点上，中美是一致的。
I believe our two countries, China and the United States, are in agreement with respect to the goal of denuclearization and resolving this issue through dialogue.
我相信，只要我们都做好准备，六方在一起，我们一起努力，共同来推进这个谈判的话，我们一定会实现半岛无核化这个目标的。这实际上也是我们的共同责任。
Well, I'm confident that as long as we all get ready and be serious in moving forward our dialogue, we will be able to achieve our common goal of the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. It is also our common responsibility.
如果大家还有问题也可以啊。
I will be open to more questions.
Okay, we'll take one last question.
Okay.
I'd say that Dr. Lieberthal has his hand up first, so Ken, fire away.
Thank you, Mr. Minister, for your very informative, formal comments and responses to questions. I was really struck in your speech that you characterized future U.S. cooperation on Afghanistan as, quote, it could become a new highlight of U.S.-China relations. Our cooperation on Afghanistan to date has been very limited. and incipient. I wonder whether you'd share with us your thinking about what the future of U.S. cooperation with China on Afghanistan may consist of that would warrant calling it a new highlight of our relationship. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
刚才您在演讲中提到了美中在阿富汗问题上的合作，这给我留下了非常深刻的印象。您还谈到美中两国在该问题上的合作可以成为我们两国关系中的一个亮点。目前两国在阿富汗问题上的合作还是十分有限和在有限范围内的。我想听一听您如何看待美中两国如何进一步推进。
和深化在阿富汗问题上的合作，以使它能够真正成为两国关系中一个亮点的这样的称号。我想中美在阿富汗问题上，我们有着很重要的共通利益。我们都希望明年之后的阿富汗的局势，或者说在实现撤军以后的阿富汗的局势，能够继续保持稳定。我们都希望看到。 阿富汗能够得到重建，我们都不愿意发生恐怖主义死灰复燃这样的情况。这是我们在阿富汗的非常重要的共同的利益。Well,
on Afghanistan, China and the United States have very important common interests. We both want to see a stable Afghanistan post-2014 or after the United States troop withdrawal from the country, and we both want to see Afghanistan succeed in its reconstruction process, and neither of our two countries wants to see a resurgence of terrorists in that country.
现在各方面对明年之后的阿富汗的形势，大多都不太持乐观的态度，这是一个事实。这更需要包括中美在内的跟阿富汗有关的国家能够加强协调，开展合作。
Now parties are not so optimistic about the prospects of the country post 2014. And I believe that has made it all the more important for China, the United States, and other countries who have close links with that country to enhance cooperation.
至于怎么来具体的合作，可能涉及到方方面面。刚才我谈到的中美一起在帮着培训阿富汗的外交官，就是一个虽然很小，但是一个很好的例子。
Well, concrete cooperation can involve a wide range of areas. Just now, I just cite one example, that is the collaborative training program of our two countries. It is not a very big program, but it's a very positive one.
明年中国将主持关于阿富汗问题的伊斯坦布尔进程的外长会议，我们当然希望美方也能够参加，我们共同来进行深入探讨。
Well, next year, China will play host to the issue of Afghanistan International Conference, the Istanbul Process International Conference. We certainly hope the United States will participate in it, where we can have a more detailed discussion.
至于阿富汗明年之后的重建进程，我想在经济方面的领域，中美方面都可以做贡献，中国可以做更多的贡献在阿富汗的经济的重建问题上。
With regard to the reconstruction process post-2014, on the economic front, I believe both China and the United States can make contribution, and China can make its own contribution in helping the economic reconstruction.
至于它国内的政治和解，这是一个很难的问题，涉及到很复杂的民族的和宗教的问题。但是我觉得我们中美两国还是可以发挥作用的，包括我们可以跟巴基斯坦一起。 跟其他的阿富汗的周边国家一起，我们来共同为此做出努力。And
the domestic political reconciliation process is a tough one. It involves complex ethnic and religious factors. But I believe on this, China and the United States can play a role too, and we can also work together with, like Pakistan and other neighbors of Afghanistan in this regard.
现在大家都在议论。 全世界都在议论叙利亚问题，也许到了明年后半年，全世界都在议论阿富汗问题。我们要有这个预测。Hopkins 是一个预测未来。 规划未来的一个学会，所以我非常希望大家能够现在就要考虑明年以后的阿富汗会是什么样的局势，中美两国包括其他国家我们能够开展什么样的合作。
And now all people are talking about Syria, but probably in the latter half of next year, the most important topic we talk about is Afghanistan.And I believe it's important for us to see far into the future. The Brookings Institution is a very forward-looking academic institution, and I believe that it is important for us to consider what Afghanistan will be like post-2014 and how China, the United States, and other countries can work together on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Minister, for providing us with a very, very productive and very enjoyable evening. Those of us who have worked with Minister Wong for years know him as a gentleman who is pragmatic, who is fair-minded, experienced. And I had the pleasure of meeting with a Chinese gentleman who was not in the government the other day, who said what he really appreciates aboutMr. Wong and his appointment is he's tough. I think we heard all of those traits on display tonight, although the toughness is disguised by a velvet glove that he wears and projects. I'd like everyone to show our appreciation for Minister Wong's address and his willingness to deal with difficult questions tonight by show your appreciation by giving a round of applause to Ms. Wong.
非常感谢王外长您刚才信息量非常大的演讲和这个答问的环节。在我们看来呢，您是一个富有经验、务实公平的人。而且我在不久前呢遇到一位中国政府之外的人呢，他谈起您的时候，他也认为呢您还有一面就是立场非常的坚决坚定。我想今天您的这个演讲和问答环节呢充分体现了这两者的结合，坚定的立场呢隐藏在这个丝绒手套之下。最后再向您表示感谢。
If everyone could just please stay seated for a moment while Minister Wong and his delegation leave. They have to catch a plane. Finish your coffee, finish your water, and then feel free to head for the exits and go watch the rerun on C-SPAN as soon as Mr. Wong is gone. Thank you very much. Thank you. It's excellent. It was terrific.